Welcome to the Shanty Sound Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Byrne, and to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of Shanty Sound, I've started my very own podcast exploring one of my favourite topics, the healing power of music and sound. I'm a lifelong musician, and I've also been working extensively with sound therapy and sound healing for many years now. And I'm guessing that perhaps like me, you're here because you're also interested in all things to do with healing music and sound. Over the last 10 years, both through travelling and the internet, I've met some pretty awesome people, and I'm excited to get to know them even better through these interviews. I'm really interested in people and what draws them to begin sharing music and sound in a healing or therapeutic way, and in learning more about the healing and uplifting effects of immersing in sound and music. So if you do enjoy this podcast, I would love you to hit the subscribe button on whichever app you're listening on, and do feel free to leave a review or a comment. And you can also check out the show notes from this and every episode at shantysound.com.au/podcast. My guest on today's episode is Pete Bengree. Pete is an internationally acclaimed professional percussionist specializing in shamanism, sound healing, music production, and one-to-one consultations. He's a member of the UK band Corner Shop, who achieved a number one hit with the song Brimful of Asha in 1996. His percussive training began at the age of 5 years. Trusting his natural awareness towards rhythm, he began to play without any instrument other than his body and mind. At the age of 10 years, Pete was lucky enough to travel to Africa, where he witnessed the Zulus drum, sing, and dance. Being so moved by their presence, he received a drum which influenced his passion into the practice of shamanism. This drum became his teacher, guide, parent, and friend. When students ask Pete how he learned his skills, his reply is simple. Listen to the drum. She will teach you all you need to know. Enjoy this episode. Here is Pete Bengree.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, thank you. Yeah. Aww. Great to be here. Finally made it.
That's awesome. Awesome to have you with me and everybody listening. And Pete and I have met a few times. First time was 2016 over in USA. That was a good time. I've got such fond memories of the sound healing camp.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, lots of really cool people.
So many definitely. Cool people. Yeah. I want to get them all on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. But it's awesome to have you. And so we met in 2016 at Jonathan Goldman's Healing Sounds. Mm. And then you came out here in 2018 to Adelaide. Mm. And that was so great, hosting your workshops and doing a little tour in South Australia.
Shaman's drum.
Yes, the shaman's drum. Oh, so I just can't wait to share what you do with everyone on the podcast today. And yeah, but I'd love to start off with finding out a little bit about you, about your background, where you grew up, where you are now, and whatever you'd like to share in between.
Okay, so I was born in Shrewsbury, which is the same place Charles Darwin was born. And so I was really fascinated about Charles Darwin, and I was really fascinated about evolution and how it kind of challenged the Christian and the church perspective of where life came from. And I had a real natural rhythm. It's like I was always moving, and I was always kind of moving to music, and I was just very intuitively experimenting with lots of different things around the house, like cutlery and glass and loads of different things, quite destructive at times because I was kind of experimenting as well. So then went to South Africa when I was 10, and because my mother was born out there, and saw the Zulus, and just absolutely blew me away. You know, it was such an incredible thing to witness. And I've heard some people say that when you're a 10-year-old, you live in a longer timescape. It's like you could experience something for, say, 5 or 6 weeks, but it seems a lot longer because of the way you're absorbing information. I don't know how true that is, but I was there for 6 weeks and we traveled around South Africa, and I had my kind of first love affair with the drum. And then we returned, and I was just totally impacted by what I'd experienced and what I'd witnessed, you know, with this culture, because it was at the time where it was apartheid. And I remember seeing a lot of the white people all miserable and the black people were singing and dancing. And I, as a 10-year-old, I was like, well, I thought it'd be the other way around, because the black people were oppressed, but yet they were happy, and the white people had all the power, but yet they were miserable. So, and it seemed to be like that kind of like in the main cities, you know, Johannesburg is a place like that. But in getting closer to the townships, it was, you know, you could see the real poverty, but you could also see the, you know, the cultural beliefs in there, you know, in what they believed in. So, so that was fascinating. So anyway, I came back, and then I got a drum sent over a few weeks later. It was like a tourist drum, but I just fell in love with the actual like essence of it, you know, with what it meant, you know, the symbolism. And started playing in bands, and I had like a few challenges when I was a child, and I was really struggling to kind of you know, find my support network, I suppose. And so by having the drum in my life, I was able to kind of focus on something that was very strong and very supportive, and I had a foundation that I just very naturally connected with. So that continued, and then started playing in bands, and carried on, and all of it was self-taught. So it was like the teacher was my drum, and I remember as a teenager, I hung this drum up in the window, and it was like I just worshipped this. And it was like I knew my faith wasn't in Christianity, wasn't in anything to do with the church. And then it wasn't until later on I discovered shamanism that I kind of felt like everything was all linked together. So that really influenced a lot of the work that I do now. And of course, working with the music from such a young age, that kind of put me into a very intuitive place for kind of working within sound healing as well. So then it all kind of came together, and then it's just refined and refined and refined over the years.
Amazing. And you've traveled a lot, haven't you, since, you know, you've traveled the world.
Oh God, yeah, I've been all over the place. Yeah. COVID, and then COVID stopped it all.
Yeah. Oh my. And where are you now?
Well, I'm currently in the UK. I was kind of very, very tempted to go and live in New Zealand, and I kind of wish I had in many ways, because of everything, you know, as the way everything's turned out. But my passion is to is just to try and make the world a better place, because I think more so now there's a lot of greed, there's a lot of confusion, there's huge segregation, and I think from being like a sound therapist, as we both kind of met within that field, I have a very deep awareness that people can kind of go and spend a lot of money on sound healing equipment, and then they can play it. But if they're not playing it from a depth and a foundation, then to me, it's a bit empty. So that's another thing that I've really tried to focus on, because I didn't come from that background. I didn't come from a very affluent background of having everything given to me. I had to either build it from nothing. And when I first started playing the drums, as in the drum kit, I was like playing the air drums, because I was like playing, you know, the instrument, but there was nothing there. So I heard all the sounds in my head, and I was playing all the drums. And then when I went to play the physical drum kit, I could naturally play it because I'd done all that preparation. And
Wow. Yeah.
And it's very different because so many people, they want the instrument and then they play it. And then sometimes they don't always keep it up because I'm just a great believer that something has to begin inside you rather than outside of you. And I think that's one of the areas that I really focus on now, is what's actually happening inside you, especially within sound work, because it's being amplified with the with the sound healing or whatever form of healing work that you're doing.
Mm. Wow, that's a really powerful statement. I love that. It starts from within.
Yeah.
Hey, I was wondering, do you still have that very first drum that you were just mentioning?
Oh, my God, I think about that. I think I'm pretty sure what I did was because I kind of became really aware of my connection with rhythm from about the age of five. I kept this drum for years and years and years. And I remember a friend of mine, she had a boy, he was a 5-year-old, and he was really into drums, and I gave it to him because it was something that had so much impact in my life. And I felt as if it was, you know, it was like a seed, you know, and I'd kind of nurtured it, and it had nurtured me, and you know, and I'd grown from that, and it just seemed like a very honourable thing to pass it on to help another child who had that potential focus. So that's what I did. I let it go and I gave it to him. And I said to his mum, I said, please, you know, just kind of let him, you know, just let him trust whatever it is. And but I haven't seen them for a long time, so I'm hoping it's been useful.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out about his journey.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, you've been a professional drummer. You've toured with some really big bands and cool stuff like that. I'd love you to tell me a little bit about that. And how did you go from that kind of world into doing what you do now?
Okay.
So, the shamanism and the drumming, yeah.
Okay, so because I started out with kind of trusting the drum very intuitively and kind of and allowing that to kind of be a guide in my life, I had a very, very, very strong intuition inside myself, and it was like a very strong trust, and I think a lot of children have that. They have that real strong trust, that real strong intuition. And sometimes the what can cause confusion is adults, because adults can confuse a child's perspective and then the child loses touch with themselves. So because I had the drum, I had a very strong connection. And so where I was playing in lots of different bands, and then I became involved in a cultural centre where I learned how to do sound engineering and light engineering. And then I was moving up north to near Manchester, and I didn't really have many possessions at that time. So there was a guy who was living in a house full of all these other musicians, and he was the drummer, and he was moving out. So they needed a new drummer. So I was ready to move. So I pretty well moved. I put the bass drum on top of my car, on top of the roof rack, and I drove all the way up there, moved in, and then started playing. And it just so happened that he was playing percussion with Corner Shop. So I was invited to the studio to go and see them. And Tejinder was born in Wolverhampton, which was very, very close to where I was born. So we kind of hit it off straight away. And the other main member was Ben, and we got on really well. And anyway, they needed a sound engineer. So I said, well, I'll do it, you know. So I started doing the sound for them. So we went off on tour and we started doing that. And then we all got on really well. And then they kind of wanted me to be, you know, kind of like part of the team. So then he got a sound engineer and a tour manager in, and then they put me onto merchandise. So I was still touring with them. I was selling T-shirts and CDs and whatnot. And then the percussionist left because he wants to spend more time with his family. And they said, well, if you want to go onto percussion, the job's yours. So that's when I moved on to percussion. And I think because of my background, because I've been self-taught, I could really feel the essence of the music. And because I'd kind of been doing the sound engineering, I'd kind of been on the other side of the stage with the crowd, and I'd kind of heard it and felt the, you know, like the music and the energy of the music. And then to be part on the creation side was just incredible. So and Tejinder was always really cool because he was like, he would give me a lot of freedom. So I could pretty do whatever I wanted to do, you know. So it was like, so it was really great. And so we carried on playing, and then we were doing more work in the US, and then we got tours with Beck and Oasis and various other things. And we just kind of went from strength to strength. And for me, it was like, you know, it was like a childhood dream, because even before, when I was backstage and I'd be kind of walking out onto the stage to play, I always, always, always kept that connection with the drum that I had as a child. And so when I walked out, I always gave thanks to the drum. I gave thanks to having this opportunity. And we used to do one song called Yolanda Cher, which sometimes used to go on for like 40 minutes, 50 minutes. And I'd like go into a trance, you know, and I think a lot of us would, because it was such a long song and it was very, very repetitive. And when it came towards the end, the drummer and myself, we used to build the rhythm up until it was like getting more and more intense. And again, I always felt there was like a very strong connection with the drum and that whole presence. And I was always interested in shamanism back then. And so one thing that shamans do is I'm not calling myself a shaman because I call myself a shamanic practitioner. In true shamanic culture, it's only the community that would refer to you as a shaman based on your work and your presence. But shamans classically will go into an altered state of consciousness to receive information for the healing of the community. And so one of the classic ways they receive this information is either through art, through poetry, through music, but they go into a trance. And so it was my way of kind of trusting my connection with the drum and also giving thanks for my childhood connection with the drum, and then also sharing the foundation that I'd built for such a long time in a musical form. And we just carried on and carried on. And then when it kind of came to an end and we all kind of started to stop touring, I wanted to focus more on the sound healing work, because I kind of wanted to reinvent myself again. And I started off doing drum workshops. I was doing drum workshops with children who were kind of, who were challenging and stuff like that. And I'll never forget, there was this one time where I first started doing the drum workshops, and there were all these kids that were like playing the drums really loud, and they were waiting for me to tell them off. And I didn't, because of course that's, you know, that's exactly what I wanted them to do, because that's what I did in my past. I played the drums so loud to transform frustration and various other things. So I started working on different workshops in different communities. And then I wanted to kind of go much, much deeper with the essence of sound. And that's when I started to kind of go deeper and deeper into the connection with the shamanism and the drums. And that's when I started teaching the shaman's drum and everything else. And so it's looking at the presence of something very, very small, which can become very powerful but very large, but also it's looking at that journey of how something becomes small to something large, because of course all of us start from being very small, and then we of course grow into, you know, into a larger human being. And so many things happen along that, you know, that path. And I think the beauty of sound and the beauty of drums, and especially linked within shamanism, is a lot of cultures have forgotten how to honor the different stages of life. And I think for both men and women, that's really important, because it's really helpful for even the parents to get involved on that, because they've walked that path as well. And so many things have been lost. And the beauty of the shamanic work is that it's always spirit driven. So when you go into trance and you get that information from the spirits, you can bring it back into the here and now, into this reality. So so that's something I've just been refining for years and years.
How did you deepen and develop your understanding of shamanism and shamanic work?
I did some trainings, and I did a one-year training with a charity called the Sacred Trust, which is based in the UK. And the first thing we did was we met up, and then we were buried alive. And it was like a shamanic burial, which is kind of linked to death and rebirth. And, a few of us were like, oh, my God, because you have all this conditioning of, you're in the, when you put in the ground, it's either because you've tripped up and you've fallen in, or you've died. And so we consciously dug our own graves, and then we spent the whole day preparing them and doing lots of ceremonial work. And then the evening we got inside and we did more ceremonial work. And it was beautiful, because it was like being in the womb, it was like just to be, in the earth, and just to feel the earth holding me. And so we used to meet up every weekend, and we kind of learned more and more about different shamanic techniques. And I was like a duck to water, because a lot of the work within shamanism is using the drum. It's using the drum, percussion, and the voice. So because I'd come from that background, I was naturally very connected with the drum and percussion. And I wouldn't say I've got an amazing voice, but when I go into trance, I can, I can sing and I can chant and I can do lots of other stuff. So that training was a very good grounded foundation of learning the techniques to be able to kind of practice. And then I started practicing with friends who were on that training, and then started working with clients, and then did a few other trainings, then worked with Sandra Ingerman, she's very famous for writing Soul Retrieval and various other books. So I did a two-year training with her. And that was for the teacher training, and to be able to teach her work. And all of that it's really important, because it gives you a very grounded understanding. And one thing that I remember I heard from the Sacred Trust training, and the teacher was Simon. He said, if ever you meet anyone who's doing some work with you, excuse me, and they call themselves a shaman, they said, walk out the other door. So that really stuck with me. And it's surprising how people very easily lose respect for shamanism, because it's the same like with lots of different modalities. But for many people who practice that work, they can have quite a challenging life, because they're kind of learning, they're healing, they're getting wounded, and lots of other things. But it's their connection with spirit that guides them through. And going back to South Africa, there's a in the Xhosa tribe, there's people called Sangomas, and they're like witch doctors. And if people start to have challenging lives, and everything starts to go wrong in their life, and they feel as if they're either having a breakdown or they're falling apart, they call it the calling. And they say that spirit is calling you to do this work. And if you don't honor that calling, then nothing's really going to improve. And there's stories where people have had numerous nervous breakdowns, and they've started to practice shamanic work or something like that with a, you know, with a depth, and their life has been transformed. But what's really, really important is that they don't start thinking, oh my God, I've had a nervous breakdown, I must be a shaman. Then it's really important that's not seen as being, well, that's what's happening, because sometimes that can happen, but it's witnessed within in cross-cultural practices. But if anyone does want to learn about shamanism, then it's really, really important that you work with credible, experienced teachers with lots of integrity, because it's the same as anything, because you can learn from someone who may just say how amazing they are, or you can learn from someone who actually sees the presence of that individual and then helps them to grow. And there's a lot of teachers out there who just focus on their own growth rather than the growth of the actual individual. And so I just think it's really important I say that, so that people are wise enough to seek out teachers with a bit of integrity.
Yeah, definitely very important in your modalities.
Definitely.
Yeah. Hey, I was just wondering, just for someone who knows absolutely nothing about shamanism that might be listening, could you just sum up in a few sentences, what is shamanism?
Shamanism, the term shaman means one who can see in the dark, and it's originally from the Tuvan area, linked to Mongolia, and it's basically an individual who, it's not specifically linked to male or female, but it's an individual who is potentially chosen by the spirits, and they can go into trance, or they can go into a space of non-ordinary reality, work within the spirit world, receive information from the spirits based on intentions of asking questions, and then bring that information back in the form of healing. And classically, it's brought back in the form of healing with music, song, dance, poetry, and it's always brought for the goodness of the community. Now, of course, when you put the ego into that, then it all gets a bit ridiculous sometimes, because if you're practicing shamanism, if you imagine that's you and that's everything that you are, shamanism is about allowing your perception of who you are to be released. So you're letting go of your ego, and then you're allowing spirit to come in, and then you're merging. And then when you're merging with spirit, that's when you're truly at one with that connection with spirit. And that's when you do the healing, because it's the spirits that are doing the healing. You're just a vessel to allow that healing to occur. And there's a lot of confusion with neo-shamans, where neo-shamanism is like new age shamanism, and it all gets a bit confusing, because people sometimes have a very distorted view of what shamanism is, because there's so many different perceptions. And that's why I said before, it's really important that people, if they do want to learn about it, then it's just important that they kind of learn from a very grounded perspective, so that they can integrate whatever information they're learning from the spirits to bring it into their life as a gift. Because there's a lot of concerns about how plant medicine's being used throughout the world, and a lot of people see plant medicine as being shamanism, which it is to a certain degree, but it's only within that culture. And within that culture, it's been practiced for hundreds and hundreds of years. And I've got a friend of mine from Chile, and plant medicine has been used within his culture for his entire lifetime. And when he was very young, he was given the role of being a guardian of a plant. And so when they're working, they're able to integrate whatever information is coming from the spirits. But sometimes in the Western world, we don't know how to integrate, because it's not from our culture. And so that's one of the most important things about shamanism, is to be able to integrate the information you're getting from the spirit, so that you can fully bring it into your life. And that can be a challenge because you might hear things that you don't want to hear. But at the same time, it's having that element of trust so that you can evolve as a human being, because as a race, we need to evolve because we've almost lost our compass and we're going in a direction which isn't going to support us. So, we need to find that direction again.
Well, Pete, we loved having you out here in Australia. Your offering is the Shaman's Drum. And I was just wondering if you'd like to tell listeners what they might learn if they were to attend a workshop.
Okay, well, you. I'll talk about the Shaman's Drum first. Something that evolved out of... There was a lot of support from a friend of mine, and what I wanted to do was I wanted to create a course sharing everything that I'd intuitively experienced as a child and then a young man into, you know, my different stages throughout life. And I also I witnessed so many different people practicing shamanic work, and I saw how they were using the drum. And there's a classic rhythm in the use of shamanic practice, which is 4-7 beats per second, and it's like boom, 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 boom. And that rhythm, it's a rhythm which will help people to go into a shamanic state of consciousness and then to be able to travel to the spirit world and then come back with information. Well, because I'd been playing percussion for so long, I to me it was just like starting the engine of a car. And it was like, well, you're sitting there, you've got the boom, 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 and then you've got the rhythm of the engine, you've got, and then you can decide where you go. And so I wanted to help people refine their foundation with the drum so that they could refine their intentions and then refine how they travel to the spirit world. And so it was creating a course which would be step-by-step guidance into refining the skills of using the drum, refining the skills of understanding how shamanism is within harmony within using the drum. So it's finding that balance, and then also helping them to bring all that together so they can then improve their shamanic practice. And there's various different exercises that I encourage people to do in darkness, because I again intuitively, when I was a kid, I used to play a lot in darkness. And then when you play any instrument in darkness, especially a drum, you're going into a space where you're sensing from your fingers and from your actual skin. So when you've got skin on skin, your other senses are not so active. And so it's kind of giving the opportunity so your fingers can develop the sense of eyesight, and your fingers can also develop the sense of hearing. Of course, they've got feeling. And again, when you play the drum with your eyes closed, it's very, very different to when you play with your eyes open, because again, it's conditioning. If we make a mistake, the first thing we'll probably do is all based on conditioning, is we'll potentially criticize ourselves. So if we criticize ourselves, then we lose that element of connection, that connection of our partnership with the drum or a partnership with using the instrument is decreased. But if we forgive ourselves and then we kind of move on and we go into a deeper space of trust, then of course that partnership is increased. And so it was all about increasing the energetic connection with the drum without promoting the use of the analytical mind. And the analytical mind is everywhere. And so what I used to do, I haven't been teaching a huge amount because of COVID, but I'm planning on doing more work online. But for that time in Australia, it was great because of course percussion's being used a lot in Aboriginal culture, and of course there's dream time, which is very similar to kind of going into an altered state of consciousness. And for me as well, coming from the UK, I felt as if I was coming with something that I'm really passionate about, something that I want to share, but also it was like an ancestral healing as well, because obviously there's been a lot of pain in Australia for many, many years. And although I'm in the here and now, all of us come from an ancestral line. And also it's really important that I bring a gift, so that when people are playing their drum and they're going into a shamanic state of consciousness, they're actually trusting they're going into that, and they're allowing that to happen with the guidance of spirit, rather than just sitting there playing the drum and then thinking they're doing it, or they're a shaman or whatever else, but all they're doing is creating a sound. And sometimes in order to be able to go deeper and deeper into that work, you need to make a lot of the preconceptions disappear and about what a shaman is or what healing work is. It's just really, really important to get that foundation and that grounding in place. So that was the main reason for creating the Shaman's Drum, because a lot of it is creating that foundation, because when I experienced all the different things in my life as from a child and trusting the drum, I was able to get a foundation based on trust. And not everybody has that experience. And so I wanted to create a course to be able to share my experiences, but also give gratitude to having those experiences and kind of passing it on, because, I'm just aware in some cultures where, you know, people from a certain age will make a real effort to pass on their knowledge to the younger generation. And I think that's something that I hold very dear to my heart, because I think that's very important. But then, of course, not all the young people want to hear it. and there's loads of things that have potentially been lost. And I'm just, whether I need to rewrite it or whatever, I just think it's really important just to, share the gifts I received and then share them as a gift to others. And that course has always been really popular, because so many people have developed a new connection with the drum, and the drum's become like a real friend, and it's just opened up their perception. So it's no longer just something that they hit because they think it does this. They're hitting it because they believe it does something, because they've got that foundation. And it's been great seeing your sales are getting the Remos over there and stuff like that. That's been brilliant to see.
Yeah, well, that was a question that I'd love to chat with you, because I guess for those people listening, we are talking about a handheld drum with a beta is the style of drum that Pete uses in those workshops. I think people would refer to them perhaps as a medicine drum or a frame drum.
I think when I first came out to Australia, I think I had the Remo drum, I think. I don't remember. But anyway, I've had this made in Estonia. And this is like a deer skin, and this is an incredible drum. It's beautiful. So the frame drums, they're used all over the world. And now in some cultures, when they went back and they did a lot of research, they discovered that the first drummers were actually women. And being men, think, oh yeah, we were the first drummers because we had the muscles and blah, blah, blah. So I've always taught from a space of being very, very sensitive, because sometimes within shamanic work, people play very, very loud, and mostly men will do this, and they'll play very, very loud, and I'm like, how deaf are your spirits? Your spirit's that deaf that you have to play that loud. So I always play quite sensitively. So this drum, it's a frame drum, and classically they're used within shamanism. All the drums that are used within shamanism are always frame drums. So anyway, the rhythm that's used is 4-7 beats per second, which is like this. But I wanted to kind of help people to go a little bit further. And I think the way I see it is it's like a mirror. So whatever rhythm you're playing here, if you're playing with a certain degree of precision in this world, then you're taking that precision to the spirit world. And that precision has to be based on something that's real. And if it's based on a perception of I'm amazing, then you're still full of ego. So when you get to the spirit world, you're going to be still full of ego. So nothing's really going to happen. But if you empty out and you allow that precision to be spirit driven, then by the time you get into the spirit world, you're kind of going to be more full of spirit. So they're all the reasons why, I wanted to kind of create the Shaman's Drum. And then I teach I teach different courses more linked to course shamanism as well. Help people to kind of learn how to do the shamanic journey. So it's all very step by step. So it's all kind of like the most important thing is just getting a very, very grounded beginning, because if you don't get a grounded beginning, then you're potentially not going to get a grounded ending, when you're kind of wanting to do more and more of this work. So it's just really important to work with good teachers.
Yeah, definitely. There was two things that spring to mind just now for me. One is that one of the big takeaways from the workshops with you for me was learning about that 4 to 7 beats per second shamanic beat or rhythm. And I was thinking about that earlier, and I was thinking, is there some science behind that? Because I know with certain sounds there's brainwave entrainment, and is there actually something physiological happening with that 4 to 7 beats
per because second? Because it's a repetitive rhythm. Some people who have done a bit of research, they believe that it'll put the brain into theta. And so when the brain goes into theta, it's kind of going into that semi-dreamlike state. And so when the brain is going into that pattern and you've got that intention, so you've actually got a direction. You're not just kind of, okay, let's just see what happens. You've actually got a proper intention. Then you're able to take that with you. And most people, when they first start, they'll be listening to the rhythm. So they'll be listening to that rhythm being played, and then they'll go into the journey, which is allowing that rhythm to take over the body, and then the mind will go into theta. I don't get too technical about it. And then once they're going into the shamanic journey, then that rhythm kind of guides them. It's like, it's just a rhythm that kind of guides them into that space. And then when they're coming back, the rhythm changes and it goes a lot faster. So then within core shamanism, that's known as the callback. And then they come back, and then they come back into the here and now, which is obviously this reality. And then they come back with the information. And so it's the kind of thing where when I teach the Shaman's Drum, I always kind of ask people to learn to journey beforehand, because there's a lot of shamanic journeys on there, which it's just important that people understand that. But there has been times where I've been asked to teach the Shaman's Drum and I've kind of tweaked it in a little bit so that there's not so much journeying, and it's kind of been linked to like an introduction to shamanism. So that kind of inspired me to create another course, because I think it's just so important that people get grounded training so that they actually know what they're doing. Because a lot of people will attend a training, they're not 100% sure what they're doing, and then suddenly they want to go and work with the public. And if they don't know what they're doing, then the public don't know what they're doing. And you can hurt people if you're not careful. So, I don't want anyone to get hurt. We're all hurting enough as it is anyway. So, I mean, it's just important that people learn properly.
Yeah. And I was wondering if you would share your thoughts So we were talking about the drums. So I use and sell the Remo drums, which are based on a medicine style drum, but they are made from a totally synthetic skin. And Remo, amazing world percussion brand. I can remember as a teenager, I also used to play the drum kit, and my practice pad was a Remo, you know, little Remo practice pad for practicing paradiddles and snare work. And, you know, so I love the Remo stuff. It's something that's been with me for a very long time. And I love the non-animal skin drums because I just find them really easy to work with. And people that are vegan and vegetarian often lean more towards wanting that sort of a drum. But I just wondered if you could speak to the benefits and the differences. Does it matter which kind of drum you use, an animal skin or a synthetic?
I think the Remo drums are brilliant. They're really, really, really well-made drums. And the advantage of using one of the Remo drums, because there's three different Remo drums then. There's the Buffalo drums, which come in the various different sizes, I think from 10 inch to 22. And then there's the Baha'i or the Black Earth, which is only 16 inch.
My favorite.
The Black Earth is amazing. And then I think there's another one called the Soft Sound, I think, which is
Comfort Sound.
That's right. Yeah. The beauty of the Remo drums is that you can play them anywhere. Now, what people will find is if they're using an animal skin over a synthetic skin, they'll find that the animal skin drum will be a lot more temperamental because it's going to be more affected by atmosphere, temperature, and humidity. Where the Remo drums, you can play in the rain, you can play in the cold, you can play next to a fire, you can just play absolutely anywhere. And I think there's always a lot of debate in either sound healing groups or shamanic groups about which is best. And of course, it's very honorable that people use the synthetic skins. And then there's always some people who will say, well, it's an honor to use the animal of the, it's an honor to use the skin of the animal because you're honoring that animal and the animals die to be part of the drum. And if you haven't actually connected with that animal as a living being, and you haven't had that connection with that animal as a living being, and you've consciously created that agreement, then I don't know how you can say the animal has honored its life to be part of my drum, because if you don't know the animal, you don't know that. So the Remo drums are very, very good for people that don't want to use an animal skin. And also as an instrument for learning, they're very, very reliable because they don't change so much. If you'll find that over a period of time, the skin might change a little bit, especially on the bigger drums, on the 22s, where you'll get a much, much deeper sound. But they're such a reliable instrument that you can learn and you can navigate the various sounds from a very, very grounded and reliable perspective, where with the animal skins, it's a lot more sensitive. And this drum I've got, the guy Tonu, who made it, he actually puts an inner tube around the wooden frame of the drum so that the skin sits over an inner tube. So if I want to tune the drum, I just pump it up with air and I can take that drum anywhere. So I've taken that drum to Mexico, all over the different world, and it's I can tune it so that it still sounds exactly the same. But many different animal skins that don't have that tuning technique, you'll really struggle to do that. So
that's incredible. I've never heard of that. Wow.
Yeah, I think it originates from Germany, where someone kind of developed it, and it's and he runs inner tune, so you can just tune it with air. And some of them have like two skins and then they have like a rim, and then you can tighten up with Allen keys. But this is brilliant, absolutely beautiful, beautiful drum. And he's such a good guy that it's like, I honor the animal that is obviously owned that skin, but I would never say that that animal died to be put on that drum ever, because I don't know that. But I really look after that drum and, you know, make sure that it's cared for and loved and played as beautifully as I can. So, you know, but the Remos are brilliant drums.
Yeah, yeah, I love them. Hey, we were talking about the importance of doing training, especially when, you know, looking at working with shamanic or drumming out in the community and with groups and that sort of thing. But could someone with zero training pick up a drum and use it for self-healing?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Definitely. What's one of the key things that I think is really, really important is to get to the space of almost becoming a witness of what it is that you're doing. So that, say, for example, when I first started playing the drums, I was quite frustrated. I had a lot of, you know, I was hurt and various other things. So when I would play the drums, I would play them pretty loud. And I used to play with these drumsticks that were just huge. But I never broke any skins. But I was playing them and I was kind of, I was allowing all my energy to come through into the drum to make something creative. So I was naturally rhythmic. I appreciate that. But if people aren't naturally rhythmic, then it's important that when they play, that they play in such a way that they don't become judgmental and they don't become too critical, because it's like they have to play with a flow so that they're allowing that flow to naturally develop, and it's allowing that flow to naturally develop so that it's organic and it's just something which is just happening. And so for example, some people may play the drum and they may kind of like just want to hold it over their chest so that the skin is kind of away from them and the inside of the drum is placed over their chest, and then they can just gently play it. And if you want to do that, you've got to be conscious of technique. You've got to be conscious of are you comfortable? If you're comfortable, then obviously you can play a lot better. And someone might be feeling good, they might be feeling upset, they might be feeling lots of different emotions, and it's just important that sometimes we allow the drum to listen to how we feel, and then we allow the drum to play back something to us. And I think because I played from that place when I was a child, I talk to the drum, because I used to spend times, I'd be talking to the drum, I'd cry to the drum, and the drum spoke back to me, and I was able to hear that because I was in that child like intuitive state. When you're an adult, you sometimes lose that innocence, you lose that element of trust, because we're all full of different thoughts of, are we doing it right? Are we doing it wrong? And that just breaks us. It just breaks the connection. When you're a child, you're just naturally in that flow of exploring. And so it's really important that people can try and just play without being too self-judgmental with themselves. And they can just play and just notice how it feels. Obviously, if their arms get tired or they're using a drum which is really heavy, parts of Europe they use enormous drums. I've had students who have come to these groups where they've got like huge quartz crystals in the drum which are like the size of my hand, and you pick the drum up and it's like, oh my god, it's like, that's a workout. And so again, the beauty of the Remos is that they're so light. And those 16-inch drums are just perfect. So if people want to learn and they just want to play, then just just play from a gentle place. It doesn't always need to be loud, because if you love someone, you don't shout "I love you" in their ear. 9 times out of 10, you'll whisper that you love them in their ear. And it's a myth where people believe that loudness is power, because you wouldn't hug someone and then shout "I love you" in their ear, because you love them so much. You would hold them and gently whisper it, and in many ways your hug would hold that essence of those words. And that's how I try and teach with the sound and the music, is that it's that essence. It doesn't always have to be loud, because it's a myth where people think loudness is power. It's just rubbish, because it isn't. You know, and that's how we're conditioned to believe that loudness is power, but it's I don't believe it's true at all.
Do you have a special way of connecting with your drum, or like
an instrument
before you I was thinking about like when you go to do something that's specifically healing, whether it's a self-healing or you're giving someone else a sound healing, or you're going to deliver a workshop. Yeah. Do you have something that you do to tune in and connect with your drum?
I recognize what's happening inside myself first. And I teach another course called the Silence of Sound, which is helping people to really go deep inside themselves. Because even though we can sit there in silence, we can still have a very, very noisy brain, and our brain can be making thousands of chaotic sounds, but yet we haven't said a word. And we can sit there and look like, we're the king or queen of the lotus, but we've got like God knows what going on inside our heads. And so so when I do that preparation, I really focus on what's happening inside myself. And I don't focus so that I'm looking for anything. I just witness what's happening inside myself. And I bring myself to a space of stillness, and I bring myself into a space of focusing on my heart. And then I allow myself to center myself with my intention, which is whether I'm going to do a healing work, or I'm going to do a performance or anything like that. But my first intention is always to connect with my spirit, to invite my spirit. So I'll call my spirit. But for people that don't do that work, and they're just wanting, say, a technique to be able to sit with an instrument, my best advice would be to sense what's happening inside yourself, and then sense what it is that you want to achieve, and just really try and find that gentleness inside yourself, and to be very, very conscious of all your movements, no matter how small they are. And then slowly begin to witness the instrument as being like another sentient being, another being where that instrument's got a consciousness as well, and be conscious of that gap, that there's a physical gap between yourself and the instrument, and be really conscious of that space, because that space is going to get shorter and shorter and shorter as you begin to play. And that space is magic, because when that space is brought together in absolute harmony, that's when magic happens. But when it's brought together with just unconscious actions of some people who were just focusing on the end result that instrument can create, as in they're focusing on the sound that instrument could create, that gap's not being honored. But when someone is conscious of their own sound inside themselves and the sound that instrument can produce, then that's a real connection with the true composer, because it's the composer of compassion because there's that it's like a heartbeat. It just grows, it contracts, and it's moving all the time. And what you'll find is as you begin to play that instrument, that together your connection will get stronger and stronger and stronger, and you'll develop an understanding for each other. Because it's I've seen some students where they come from a background of they got every single sound healing instrument you can imagine, but yet they're totally disconnected inside. And it's like, and I've gone to some things where it's like, I'm like, are you clearing out the garage? It's like, it's just unbelievable, you know, where people just don't notice that gap. And I do get, I do have a bit of a reputation for really speaking my mind, and I have to be careful, because I mean, you know, comparing someone doing a healing of using sound to clearing out the garage is not the most nutritious use of words. But I can just really tell those people who have not done their, you know, their groundwork. And that's one of the things that happens a lot within sound healing work on anything to do with sound, is that people just want to buy everything. And they think the more instruments they've got, the more magic they can create, the more power they can create. But if it's not happening inside, you've got nothing to give to that instrument, because the instrument can only produce the sounds. But when we focus on what's happening inside ourselves, then we're actually amplifying what's happening to the instrument, and then the instrument is amplifying that partnership of ourselves and the instrument to the listener. So that's where my work is going. It's kind of going smaller and smaller and smaller to actually look at that, to refine it more and more and more. So there's that foundation of the self with the instrument, and then you've got the sound. So that's why I teach the silence of sound, because we have sounds inside ourselves, plus we have silence. And of course, with sound healing, there is silence and sound, but it's that gap between the silence and the sound, which is really important, because anything can happen within that space. And I mean, and I loved coming to that, you know, playing with you guys, you and James. Oh my God, loved it when you're doing your sound bath, because it's just really special for me to be able to witness. Whether it's other musicians or sound healers who have that depth, and when I witness a musician who plays an instrument and they are just so at one with that instrument, and they've almost disappeared into the instrument, oh, it's incredible. When you've got someone who's playing from ego and they're like, look at me, it's just a bit, okay, you know, it's a bit boring. But when you have someone who just disappears into that instrument, that it's just incredible.
Mm. Yeah, well, we loved having you play with us too.
Oh, amazing. Mm.
Might be well before we get to do that again. But hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Cross fingers.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Pete, tell me about your book.
Okay. Well, I wrote a book called Inhaling the Breath, Exhaling the Word. And it was a book of poetry and short stories. And it's a bit sad, because I kind of met this woman that I really loved. And then she developed cancer and she died. And I was really heartbroken by that. And I remember she always used to talk, she used to love birds, and she always used to say that when there's dawn chorus, she said it's not dawn chorus specifically linked to dawn. She said that dawn chorus is often approximately 42 minutes before dawn, because It's the way that the trees respond to the oxygen as the light comes. And I'll never forget, because the day she died, there was a bird that flew to my window and landed on this tree at 7 o'clock every morning for 3 days. And it sang the most sweetest song I'd ever heard for 3 days. And I'd never heard it before, and I never heard it again. And I looked in the tree and I couldn't see the bird, and I could hear this song, and I knew it was her. And so I was so touched by spending time with her that I wanted to write a book. And I'd written a lot of poetry since I was, you know, when I was with her. And so I released the book, and it's all about it's obviously it's written from, you know, from being a man, you know, because I don't know what a woman, I only can know what a woman feels by when they talk. All I know is what I feel. So it was written in a way that how a man can be more present to love, and how he can become more vulnerable to love, and how he can become more gentle to love, and how he can become more conscious to love. And because I think when you love someone, and then you witness the unwanted visitor, which is cancer, arrives, and you witness cancer take hold of the person that you love, and your whole life changes. Of course, their life changes more so, and it's not an easy thing to manage, because of course there's no real guidance for anything like that, you know, because people don't get taught how to manage stuff like that. They don't get taught how to grieve. They don't get taught how to do many other things. We learn that as we go through life. And so I just really wanted to share this book. And so I wrote it and self-published it. It's on my website. And I remember, because when I was teaching in Costa Rica, do you remember Wendy from the,
yeah.
When I was teaching in Costa Rica, we did a group out there, and then we were all sharing stories and sharing poems, and I was just sitting there, and then suddenly she started reading one of the poems from the book, and I was like, oh my God. And it was so it was just so beautiful to actually hear that. And I've written another book as well, about when I went back to New Zealand, and I kind of went back and visited all the different places that we visited, and you know, saying goodbye, but that's still waiting to be edited. You know, sometimes I get close to doing it. But then I'm also writing another book now, which is linked to what we were just talking about the preparation for using an instrument. And I'm not too sure when that book's going to be ready, but as soon as it is, I'll let you know. And
they're great.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So do you have any kind of exercise or recommendation that you would like to share with the audience to help them connect with sound?
I intention is really, really important, is to always have an intention of what it is that you want to do. And forgiveness is always really, really important, because for those people who have come from a musical background, whether they've had lessons, some people who have had lessons within music really struggle with doing spontaneous music, because they've come from a background of reading music and they don't know how to just develop that flow. And so intention is everything. And the reason why I say forgiveness is because for people that don't come from a musical background, that they're learning something, and if they make a mistake, then it doesn't always matter, because a mistake can always lead them into something else. But if they forgive themselves, that mistake will lead them into something else. But if they don't, the mistake will remain a mistake. There was a story of Charlie Parker. I think it was Charlie Parker and Herbie Hancock, and they were playing together. And Herbie Hancock was really, really nervous, because he was like, oh my God, I'm playing with Charlie Parker. It's like, I really can't make any mistakes. And anyway, and they were all playing away, and Herbie Hancock made a mistake, and he was like, oh my God. And but then he kind of went with it, and then they started going off in this different sideline of music. And then at the end, Herbie Hancock said, oh, I'm really, really sorry for making that mistake. And Charlie Parker said, well, I didn't realize it was a mistake, because what we did afterwards was great. So it's just important to remember that a mistake doesn't always have to be, you know, a mistake. It's just something that happens, but it's our perception. You know, if we perceive that as a mistake, then it's wrong. But if we perceive it as just something which is the natural flow, it's not wrong, because it's the natural flow. And if we can take forgiveness into that journey, so that we can witness and feel what it is that we're doing without being judgmental and without being too rigid, then we're in a space where we can just learn and we can grow more. Because I didn't come from the background of getting lessons. I came from the background of playing. And the more I learned, that was from listening to what the drum was telling me. And for me to kind of also talk to the drum. So that level of communication can be transferred into any relationship with any instrument. Of course, some instruments are a little bit more technical. You know, guitars, you've obviously got, you use all your fingers. With a drum, you're either using your fingers on the skin or you're using the beater. But with gongs and stuff like that, of course, you can still go from that space of being really gentle to really loud. And of course, you've got a huge space depending on what the diameter of the gong is. So always kind of like prepare yourself, so that you prepare yourself in a way where you can kind of witness what's happening, find your own stillness and have your own intention about what it is that you want to achieve, and just forgive yourself for whatever happens. Because I still make mistakes, but I don't call them mistakes. I say, well, that's spirit. You know, spirit's kind of, you know, guiding me to do something. And I don't believe in the word mistake. You know, I think it's a moment in time which doesn't fit our perception. You know, just let the moment in time be whatever it is. It doesn't have to be this, that, or everything. You know, I mean, if we play it and it doesn't feel good, then there wouldn't be a lot of point in doing that again. But if we play something that doesn't feel good and then we continue and then it takes us into a space where it does, then potentially we weren't feeling that good in the first place. So we've actually mirrored something that was happening. And we've been able to mirror it into a space where we've been able to bring about healing, because we recognized the whole journey. So being a witness is just crucial, but not everybody understands the concept of being a witness, because you almost have to you have to see from a space of being like detached, because you're seeing from a space where you're so deep inside yourself that you're also be able to kind of witness your own emotions. And that's a whole course within itself, because I mean, you know, that's just a huge body of work, you know, witnessing. Yeah. Oh my God, massive.
Yeah, wow. Well, where can people get in touch with you and connect with you if they do want to find out more about all the amazing things that you have to offer?
Well, my website is beinginbeauty.com. And when I did the second burial, I I'll tell you a quick story about that second burial. I was in the ground, and I saw all these spiders coming towards me. I was like, oh my God, what are these? And they were like all these little spiders, and I was a bit scared. And then suddenly I saw this like crystal white spider come, and the whole grave kind of turned into like this crystal space, and these little spiders just completely disappeared. And anyway, and in the morning when I got out of the grave, I saw a friend of mine, and she said, how was it last night? And I said, well, you know, this happened and blah, blah, blah. And before I even told her the story, she gave me this piece of wood, which she'd been carving all night. And she said, I gave you spider medicine last night. And I was like, oh my God. And then I told her the story. We were like, ooh. But in that second burial, I got the words for being in beauty, and spirit gave me the words, when we see through the eyes of beauty, we witness beauty creating beauty in our lives. And what I believe is the meaning of that is sometimes we can become so overwhelmed by life that we can see so much pain, we can see so much suffering, so much confusion, but there's always beauty. It might be in the smallest of places, you know. It could be, you know, like you can walk a cliff top and you can see a single flower, and it's everywhere, but it can sometimes be very, very small, and it's just trusting that really, you know, we are beauty on a beautiful planet, and one thing that I think a lot of us all forget is that we're living organisms living on a living organism, and we need the earth more than the earth needs us, and that's the reality, is the more we can recognize our own beauty by our own presence, and even if we need to go back in time to connect with the innocence of our child or anything like that, then we can allow ourselves to sit in the present moment so that we can just be in a space of beauty and just to witness, because if we can see through the eyes of beauty, then we can really, really see so many magical things in life. I mean, I love nature here, you know, and I feed the birds and I see all these different birds coming in, and that's just such a beautiful thing to witness, because, you know, they're just doing their thing and I love to support them. And we can, even if we close our eyes, we can see the beauty of our own internal organs, because we are really walking miracles, you know, when we think about how, you know, because I work as a nurse as well, and how we think about all those biological reactions that create life. I mean, wow. You know, I mean, for us to come out with all the limbs in the right place and to be an almost perfect human being is a miracle. And it's something that I think a lot of us really take for granted because of conditioning. And you know, we are amazing, every single one of us. And I often think about, you know, if politicians would just look in the mirror and just celebrate how amazing they are, rather than try and think about all the dastardly deeds they want to get up with, you know, the world could be so, so different.
Absolutely. Well, your Being in Beauty website will be in the show notes, and people can jump on there and check out all your amazing stuff. And I think we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Pete, for coming on the Shanti Sound podcast.
And thank you for having me. We finally made it.
Yeah. Great to catch up.
And yeah, definitely.
We'll do it another time, hey?
Yeah, definitely. Lots all of right. love.
Love to you.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to the Shanti Sound podcast.
You can access all of the show notes at shantysound.com.au/podcast. I would love you to subscribe, like, comment, or leave a review wherever you're listening. And connect with me on Instagram at shanti_sound and Facebook at Shanti Sound Australia. The music and sounds featured in the intro and outro are excerpts from the Shanti Sound Soundbath CD, recorded and produced by Michelle and James Byrne. You can download this and other music by Michelle and James Byrne at shantysound.com.au/music. Remember, sound brings healing and presence. The truest and sweetest sound comes from within. So hum, sing, and create sound whenever you can. Thanks for listening. I look forward to sharing with you again soon.